That is absolutely true. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here in Studio 4 on the John Gambling Show. Friday, good morning.
Good morning. Holiday season, Christmas lights.
Yeah, I saw you at the tree.
Tree lighting. People seem in a good mood. It's starting to get a little bit crisp. Actually, it was cold yesterday. I did a couple of events this week outside. And then today I got to do an indoor event, but a very sad one. One of our commissioners, Matt Sappelin, who is the commissioner for people with disabilities, a guy who came down with cancer at age 6, went blind at age 6, and never let it get in the way. He ran the marathon twice. He was captain of NYU's wrestling team. Great family. Wife and kids are spectacular. And I went to visit him in the hospital about 2 weeks ago, and he had gotten out a day after that. He was all gung-ho. His mother
How
was
old?
There.
How old? 41?
41 or 42.
I talked with Dave Pollack, who represents the cabbies, and we'll get into what he was talking to me about. But this would have been Wednesday morning, I guess. And he said that he had just heard about Matt's passing. And he sat next to Dave Pollack in the cabbie hearings, And he said he was really, really one of the good
classy guys. Classy guy, smart guy. Never had a bad day in his life, I would guess. I mean,
even though he had as bad a day as you can have, right?
He had more problems than anybody can imagine, and I'm told a lot of pain. Cancer gets to be painful, and I'm told just excruciating pain. And he the last time I talked to him was about a week ago, and he was gung-ho to get back to work and had lots of plans. We talked about everything we've got to get done in the next couple years, and he was going to be there to do it. And, nothing you can say. I give a lot of eulogies. Most times you don't know the person. This one, I knew him very well, and it's a lot harder. And this is my third funeral this week.
I was going to say, this is your third funeral. You had Mrs. Daly?
Rich Daly, the former mayor for 20-odd years, and his father before him for 20-odd years of Chicago. Maggie had cancer, struggled with it for a number of years.
And then Teddy Forsman.
Teddy Forsman, a guy who was very smart, really invented the private equity business as much as anybody. Phenomenally generous guy, had a number of charities. He didn't just give money. He created charities to go and raise money and funded them himself, but then tried to get money from others, get real leverage. And 10 years before, I gave a eulogy at his brother's funeral, who was a close friend of mine, Nicky Forsman. Here it is 10 years
later. Well, you're lucky to have been there, but boy, that's a job.
I'm very sad, and the flags for the city are flying at half mast because of Matt Sappelin, but he made this city better for an awful lot of people, and we will miss him.
All right. The reason I was talking with Dave Pollack, who is the executive director of the Committee for Taxi Safety, is they have sued the city on the taxi of tomorrow, and I found their reasoning to be, from my point of view, somewhat suspect. But I'm curious why they sued and what the city wants to do.
The issue is, how do you make cabs accessible for everybody now? You know, there's a limit to how much money is available, how much technology is available, what is practical on the streets of the city. The taxi of tomorrow that has been chosen in a competitive bake-off is much easier for people with disabilities who aren't wheelchair-bound. The way the doors open and the space and that sort of thing, how easy it is to reach to pay, and we've done a number of things along those lines. The problem that some people are still focusing on is wheelchair-bound people. And one of the problems is, in New York City, taking a wheelchair out in the street to flag a cab down just is very difficult. And we all know the practical world, the cabbies would not stop, because it will take time to load the passenger, and that may not be fair, it may not be what we want, but I think experience has shown that that's unfortunately all too often, not every time, but all too often what happens. And it's just dangerous to take a wheelchair out in the streets the way everybody, this is a different city than elsewhere. So the idea that we have is you would have a certain number of wheelchair accessible cabs and a phone number, and we would send a cab when you needed it, if you're wheelchair bound. I think it's a much more practical way is to actually get a cab to people who need them. And you know me, I want cab service the whole city. That's why we have before up in Albany a taxi bill that would let us sell medallions for people outside of Lower Manhattan. I saw.
How does AccessoRide factor into AccessoRide all
is,
of this?
Well, it's
because
service.
It is the
it's
service.
An MTA service, right, provided by the MTA, so it's a state service.
Very expensive.
Phenomenally expensive. I mean, people say, well, you just give everybody a voucher and let them take a cab, and it would be a third of the price. The trouble is, if you're wheelchair-bound, the cabs don't show up. You know, that's the real problem. And I think there are people, there's a Senator Tom Harkin who means well, from a state in the Midwest where I don't think they have restrictions in that state that require taxi cabs to be wheelchair accessible. So, but he has always been very advocate for people with disabilities, and I appreciate that. He's a good guy and means well. But New York City is very different than his state, and you have to have something that doesn't just sound good, but that really will work.
May I?
We don't have taxis in 4.5 boroughs as it is, certainly not, and even in the other half a borough, which is Manhattan, south of 96th Street, we don't have taxis that stop even when they are wheelchair accessible.
May I possibly be insensitive? I don't mean to be, but what was Matt Zappelin's opinion about handicapped accessibility
to the cab. Ways that we could have something that was really practical.
Mm-hmm.
Matt fought for people with disabilities as hard as anybody I've ever met. But the reality is we can only do things at certain speed and only certain things work. During Matt's term in office, we've made enormous progress in guaranteeing people access. Are we where you want to be? No, of course not. And, you know, hopefully we now have the problem of continuing Matt's work, and I'm as committed to that as Matt would be.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let me take a break here. It's 16 minutes after 8 o'clock, and we'll be taking your phone calls.
On the rocks.
Mayor, I hope you're doing well.
Ain't no surprise. Just pour me a drink, and I'll tell you some lies. Got nothing to lose, so you just sing the blues all the time.
Neil Diamond, Bumper Music Friday here on the John Gambling Show. He was all over New York City this past week, one of the great ones. Boy from Brooklyn, of course.
Absolutely.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here, and let's see here, where do we want to go here? I talked with City Council President Christine Quinn this week, and she, of course, has made some noise about your homeless program. She called it a cruel program to ask people to prove that they need the homeless shelter. This has been going back and forth.
Well, a very small percentage of the homeless are single adults, and this is about single adults. Most homeless are, the typical would be a woman with a couple of kids, but families. And sometimes not just a woman, sometimes man and a woman, sometimes fewer or more, but on average. And we insist and have for a very long time that you show that you don't have any alternatives. This is the public's money. The public doesn't want to pay. You have an obligation to take care of yourself and your family to help you. And if they can't, then the taxpayer is willing to reach into his or her pocket. I think in New York we are compassionate and make sure they don't sleep on the streets. So all we're doing is having singles have exactly the same requirement, show that you have a need before. And I will say I don't understand what the brouhaha is. I don't know that anybody really wants to look the public in the eye and say, well, we're going to pay for services even if they're not needed. And everybody would say, oh, of course, only if they're needed. Well, if they're needed, you got to find out whether they're needed, and that's all we're trying to do here. It's a similar thing to fingerprinting. I think it was Rudy that put in fingerprinting as a
food
requirement
stamps, right?
For food stamps. And it turned out there were a lot of people double, triple, quadruple dipping. That stopped immediately and reduced the number of people on food stamps. Food stamps, once again, if you are entitled to it, great, but you're not entitled to more than what you're entitled to. And somebody said to me, well, you know, if there's no corruption now, why continue it? Well, that's the ways that you keep the corruption out. And in fact, virtually all city employees have to be fingerprinted when they join the city government. So if you got to be fingerprinted to work for the city, not unreasonable that we should just make sure that you're entitled to the benefits that we're trying to give you on the other side of the equation.
Speaking of dollars and cents, there was a story this week that says that in 3 years under Obamacare, one-third of all New York Staters now, one-third of all New York Staters will be on Medicaid. I don't think we can afford that, can we?
Well, the Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, the prescription, new prescription thing, all of these things are nice things, but none of them are funded in a sustainable way. And
I mean, just the model itself is
yeah,
not there.
For example, Social Security was the easiest one to understand. In Social Security, when it was created, life expectancy was a lot shorter. And so the expectation was that you wouldn't live that many years to collect benefits. Today, somebody born today has a 50-50 chance of living to be 100 here in America. And there's just certainly nobody collects enough money to fund the benefit stream going out that long. It's also true that when Social Security was created, there was something like 33, I think, a number like that, workers for every recipient. Today, it's 3 workers for every recipient and will be 2 workers in another 10 years, I think, some numbers like that. And the same thing is true with these other programs, Medicare, Medicaid. Medicaid started out as a program for poor people, Medicare for elderly people. Just that's sort of overstating it, but rough ways to look at it. And with time, the eligibility has been expanded.
Which is always the way.
Well, because constituents want it, and nobody thinks about how you pay for it, and legislators are only too willing to grant it, maybe executives as well, and I'm not just blame legislators. But the bottom line is you wind up with a system where the projections say between Medicare, Medicaid, and the expanded benefits that are being added on and things that have come out of the new health care bill, we're going to spend 25% of our GMP, some number like that, in X number of years. Can't do that. I thought the president was right when he started the debate about health care to talk about, you know, how we were going to pay for all this and also whether we're in fact getting the kind of aid that we need and kind of help. Europe spends about $3,300 per capita per year on health care. We spend about $7,500. So we spend double what they do in Europe, but Europe's life expectancy is roughly 2 years greater. And so, and that's a good measure of whether or not you're getting the value. And the trouble is when you try to reform what kind of care we provide or how we provide it or who provides it or how often we provide it, whatever the case may be, there are an awful lot of entrenched interests. Hospitals want to keep beds full. People that work in the industry want to keep their jobs. It's easy to demagogue about it.
Are these kind of problems fixable? I mean, I know intellectually they are. But in the real world,
it's a very difficult political lift. But I think, you know, if elected officials were to stand up, and I've always believed the public is smart enough to respect people that give them bad news. Now, conventional wisdom by most political analysts would be, never say that you're there's a cost to go along with a benefit. But yeah, at some point you get into real trouble. I mean, just take a look at Western Europe. They really, for all of this, I know the stock market rallied this week, 5% in New York and similar overseas. But the bottom line is none of the things that were implemented or even announced this week go to solve the problem. They are just there to prevent a run on the country's currency or the country's debt because they're sharing, most of them are sharing the EU.
Or the entire EU, for example.
Or the entire EU. But they're not there to fix it. Greece still has to find a ways to have its people pay taxes. An awful big percentage of the people that live in Greece don't pay their taxes. It's a great story. There's a tax on swimming pools in Athens, and somebody took a picture from the air and counted the number of swimming pools. There are 6,000, and only 600 are on tax returns. It's this. America has a tradition of paying taxes. If you
because
owe
we're
it,
a
you
fair can, people, I think.
Yeah, okay. And then it's easy to enforce a law when 95% of the people obey the law, because it's manageable to only go after the 5% that doesn't. It's a very different story when 50% of the people don't obey the law. Then what does the government do? Some problems are just so big that it's hard to see how anybody could ever attack them. And what the future is for these countries, I don't know.
I'm sure you know this, because there was a story this week, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, about Spain. 25% unemployment.
Yeah, and it's the scary thing is an awful lot of those unemployed have college degrees. You know, we always say, go get an education, and
well, that's
a
what
job
these,
will be there.
The kids are screaming about.
And that's, for the first time, not true. The other problem is we have talked forever about the value of education, and if you don't have an education, you aren't going to share in the American dream, you aren't going to be able to be self-sufficient, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's what you're seeing now. That is the big part of the disparity between the wealthy and poor, 1%, 99%, it's much greater than that. But you get the idea that there is more of a gap than before. And if you take a look at what the characteristics are of those who are being successful and those that are being frozen out, college graduates in America, unemployment rate's about 4%, although much higher among new college graduates, but overall 4%. Kids who are people who have dropped out of high school, it's 25%. So you're starting to see the real world application of what we've all been talking about. Up until now, it's just been one of these things. The press, when you talk about it, rolls their eyes. Yeah, yeah, right. Sure, you have to have a good education. You're starting to see that. And it's not an American problem. It's a world problem. As you just pointed out, in Madrid, Cairo came apart, not because poor people were rallying. It's because people just couldn't find jobs. And the trends are worrisome. And I don't see how you stop automating repetitive jobs.
Right. We have become a much more efficient world. We don't need manual labor.
And when you are a consumer, you like that because the products that you buy are a lot more affordable. On the other hand, if you're looking for a job, it makes it more difficult. And it's also true that in a global world with better transportation and communications, jobs, the way you don't have to be by your customer, can move. A plumber has to be in the neighborhood, is the example I always use. You can't fix the plumbing in your house from the other side of the world. On the other hand, if you wrote software, you could do it anyplace. Your job?
Anyplace.
Anyplace. You could do it from any place in the world. Nobody knows.
We're actually in South America right now.
Right. I actually had the governor of Rio de Janeiro in yesterday, and they have similar kind of problems.
Absolutely.
And these are big problems. And whether, I think your original question, whether anybody can fix the cost of medical care or a problem like this, it requires real change and willingness to accept that change and willingness to lead, whether you're the executive or the legislature that has to enact laws. Winston Churchill once said, America can always be counted on to do the right thing after they've exhausted every other possibility.
Let's
hope that's at least, maybe not be a nice way to get where you want to be, but at least thinks we're going to get there.
All right.
We're gonna get there.
There is a goal, and there is an end game on the whole thing. Mr. Mayor, sit tight. We'll come right back again.
I can almost hear my mother calling Neil, go find your brother. That is home, and it's time for supper. Hurry on. I see two boys racing up two flights of staircase. So
squirming into Papa's embrace. And his whiskers warm on their face. Where's it gone? Oh, where's it gone?
Brooklyn Roads, Neil Diamond on Neil Diamond Bumper Music Friday, appropriate here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Friday,
yeah, exactly.
It is appropriate.
It is appropriate. You're absolutely right. Your traffic commissioner did some. She's done a couple of unusual things, but this week she put up haiku signs, traffic signs.
Well, I think the most unusual, the way you phrase it, thing is she has pushed traffic deaths down to record lows.
Great. Super.
That is unusual because nobody else has done that in an awful long time.
But she just put the haiku signs up. Did they work that quickly?
We have a state grant that you have to comes from the money comes from DWIRS, and it is a grant to us of $25,000
to give it a try
to use for safety education. You can't use it to fix potholes. As a matter of fact, we spend $2 billion a year to fix potholes, but this, or for maintenance, actually, on the roads. This is $25,000, kind of small. Can't use it for anything else. And if it gets one, if it saves one person's life, is it worth $25,000? I think so.
Oh, absolutely so.
And it's clever. Yeah. You know, you it's, and I do you compose I, your own haiku?
I couldn't compose a haiku if I wanted to.
Neither could I. On the other hand, a lot of people do.
Do they? Yeah. That's what you found?
That's what she thinks, and I think she's right. Yeah, sure, a lot of people do.
You know, I've been on other good subjects, yeah, not problem subjects, I've been talking a couple of times in the past couple of weeks about Bryant Park, because I was up there a week ago Saturday. What a spectacular job these folks have done.
It is, and one of the things that makes it possible, which took a long time, but really required an awful lot of cooperation from a lot of people, was to move the fashion show up to Lincoln Center, because two-year fashion shows, and it takes a year to set up, a week to set up, and a week there, and a week out. I mean, it took a lot of time, and it kept you from being able to do other things. And so it's turned out to be a win-win-win. Fashion industry is doing better in New York City than ever before. We have double the number of fashion houses that Paris does. We've become the fashion capital of the world, but it left Bryant Park free of that, to be able to be renovated. And, you know, you go back not that many years ago, John, Needle Park, it was...
Yeah, it was terrible. You wouldn't go near it. Everybody
forgets just how far we've come. And if you want to give credit to somebody, you know, there's the Parks Commissioner and Setecon and a lot of these things, a lot of other people, the police department for enforcing laws. But I would give credit to the taxpayer, because in the end, the taxpayer pays for most of our parks. Now, with something like Bryant Park, you get a lot of private money as well. But all the parks, we did an event 2 days ago at a school where we have the playground open to the public afternoons and weekends, and then the summer when the kids aren't using it. And if you remember, one of the 127 different things in Plan YC was a commitment to, before we leave office, make everybody in the city live no further than a 10-minute walk to open space. And we're pretty much on schedule. Yeah,
that's an interesting goal. I mean, it comes back to planning and running a megalopolis, you know, of 8 million people.
And also, the things that I always get a kick out of, these tiny parks in the middle, you know, more and more streets, just big streets down the middle, and it just makes it's such a different feel. You don't just see concrete. You don't think of that old New York where everything is it's just solid and dark and unattractive. Plants make a big difference. They also incidentally clean the air. And some of those come from our friend Bette Midler's Million Trees. You know, Bette Midler's another one of those. When you talk about who has made a difference in the city that will last a long time, put Bette Midler on the list, too.
I mean,
not only is she a great entertainer, I love her music.
Who would have guessed, Bryant Park, when I was there a couple of Saturday nights ago, there was a line of people, I mean, lined up to get into Bryant Park to go ice skating. Who would have thought?
You know, take a look at Broadway, you know, through Times Square and Herald Square. The number of people there at 11 o'clock at night, even when the weather is cold, It's really quite amazing.
It's really good. I know that yesterday you did something, speaking about development and the like. The Willets Point project has been one that has been
finally
sort of
going.
Slow to come.
Yes, a lot of legal challenges and reviews.
What is it? What is the Willets Point development?
Willets Point, number one, do you know who Willett was?
No.
First mayor of the city of New York.
Okay.
Named after him, I assume. I didn't do the research, but it'd be too much of a coincidence
to have another Willets.
Right. It is land, if you want to think about it, it's right next door to Citi Field, the Mets' home field, formerly Shea. And it is filled with lots of small businesses that cater to repairing automobiles. You know, new tires, new windows, body shops, that kind of stuff. There are businesses there. But it's an enormously attractive piece of land because of its proximity to Citi Field, to the tennis center, to downtown Flushing.
LaGuardia.
LaGuardia Airport. You've got this number 7 line. And the city has to keep moving on. And so using it with just one-story small buildings isn't the best use. And it's phenomenally polluted. This is an old piece of property that has, or old, it's all, Earth was created pretty much the same time, but this piece of property has been used by industry for an awful long time. And so it's also very low, and it floods. So getting it ready for development, this is what we did, put a shovel in the ground yesterday, groundbreaking. Was for the beginning of infrastructure, sewers and that kind of stuff. We'll build the land up. We'll put in all the infrastructure where we've got proposals out for developers. The first part will have a hotel and stores and housing and a lot of things the city needs. And there are other parts of it which will, as the economy gets better, get developed.
Will it be like Long Island City? Will it be similar build-out?
Yes, because you're starting basically from scratch. We've got programs to retrain people there. Long Island University has got a program where they can learn English and other skills. We've got relocation services for these businesses. Most have sold to the city already, sold the property. Handful we're in negotiations with, and a very small number say never, and we've won every court case so far to be able to use eminent domain, but it will be for a very small percentage, if any. Because in the end, if you know the court's going to take it, you might want to strike a deal, figuring you'd get a better deal.
What about, will any of the potential super schools, genius schools, maybe locate there?
There are plans for a school, too mm-hmm. early to tell which school or what kind of school. There's plans for a convention center, the first one built outside of New York City. People say, oh, you'll never get people to go there. Come on, Queens, you know, if Brooklyn, I think, would be the second largest city in the country, if it was a separate one, Queens would be the third, and that's always a battle. Queens is growing, so is Brooklyn. These become very hot places there. Enormous number of hotels in Queens and in Brooklyn and restaurants and places that you'd never thought would get developed are. And people from around the world come here. And in a place like Queens, it's so diverse. When they talked and where they come from about, oh, you know, the family down the street moved to New York. Well, they moved to Flushing, Queens, or Astoria. And so that's to them what New York's all about, not Manhattan the way people who've lived here a long time might think of Manhattan being the center. The days of Manhattan being the only place with cultural institutions and hotels and good rooms and low crime, that's gone. It is spread around the city. And that's all good news. But this is the first step of putting working on a sewer. And I talked to some of the construction workers. We took pictures. You know, needless to say, they're happy because there's a lot of construction
long-term
throughout
long-term construction,
and,
too.
Right. And construction around the city is doing a lot better. Is it back to where you'd like it? It'll never be. If you ask a union, they'll always say we have some members unemployed. You ask workers, some aren't. But, yes, it's done a lot better.
What's the story with 9/11 Museum? Delay because of questions of financing?
It's slowed down.
Looks like another year.
I just much too early to tell. We're talking to the Port Authority and trying to figure out something. Port Authority's got its problems. I'm sympathetic to that. On the other hand, the money that was raised with the understanding it would go towards the museum and that the Port Authority would honor an agreement it made to provide the infrastructure. But we're talking, and you know, the people at the port, they have a new chairman, they have a new executive director, and they're working hard, and we're working with them.
All right, why don't we take a break here, Mr. Mayor, and then we've got some telephone calls, and maybe you might have a tweet or two or three at 11 minutes before 9 o'clock. Let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that means we have one open line, 800-321-0710.
Blue, everybody knows one. Song, song, blue, every garden grows warm. Me and you are subject to the blues now and then.
6 minutes before 9 o'clock and Neil Diamond, Bumper Music Friday, Song Sung Blue. Let's hope that... Everybody's got a smile on their face.
Yeah.
It's Friday,
it's
Friday. You got a tweet there.
We're going to do a tweet.
We'll get to the phones in a sec.
Here is the first tweet. Whatever happened to those cool umbrella-like scaffold replacements you announced last year? Very cheery.
I don't remember those.
Sure you do. Scaffold replacements outside of a building, if they're working up above, put this. But it's all the same. It looks, you know, old, dated, hasn't changed in years. And
sort
we had a design competition, and there was a better one selected, much more attractive and safer and accommodates lights better and more fuel efficient and the electricity, the way the lighting's done and all that sort of stuff. And by accident, or at least I think it's accident, the first prototype of the Urban Shed competition winning design called Urban Umbrella, that you knew, is being installed at 100 Broadway this month.
100 Broadway, that's right next door.
Well, you'll be able to see it this month.
I'll look forward to it.
Well, it could give us until the end of the month.
Okay.
But, you know, that even the 31st of December qualifies as this month.
One Friday between...
If we've lasted this long, we can last that long.
One more month, hopefully. All right, let's go to the telephones. We're going to start with Al out in Morristown. Hello, Al in Morristown.
Yeah, Mayor, I was living in the Bronx. I went to my doctor. He said I had a heart attack. He called for an ambulance. A fire department, FDNY ambulance came, took me to Beth Israel, and they took care of me. But then I got a bill for $800. I mean, aren't city services covered by our taxes? I mean, if I have a fire in my house or I get mugged, am I going to get a bill from the police or fire department, too?
No. The issue here is that somebody's got to pay for the ambulances. The fire department took over responsibility for EMS. There was a merger of the fire department and EMS, and now that's where you have FDNY city ambulances. This is covered by insurance, so if you have insurance, you can submit it to them. And it's a competitive rate compared to the private ambulances. You know, hospitals have to get some revenues to pay for medical service. Nobody gets rich off any of this. We do spend the money and pretty much, I think it's probably fair to say, spent intelligently. So, yes, it sounds like a lot of money, but so does the doctor fees and hospital fees and tests and everything else. And, that's what John has been talking about ad nauseum on his program, about the high cost of medical care.
Yeah, okay, thank you very much, Al. Appreciate that. Michael, you are next. We've got Mayor Bloomberg.
Hi, good morning, John. Hi. Good morning, Mayor Bloomberg. First, I must tell you, I love this Friday morning chat. It is a real way for the public to connect directly with those who are really, running our government.
All right, your turn.
Okay.
Let him go on.
I have to keep the clock in mind here.
Way to go.
The truth is, with the mayor's busy schedule, I'm sure it's really appreciated. About the homeless shelters, Mr. Mayor, you support fingerprinting to verify identity and validate, eligibility for, to protect the taxpayers' money. And, what about using the same techniques for those who break into our country illegally?
Well, the shelter system, I don't believe we fingerprint. The issue there is just asking people to show that they don't have alternative private family or other private ways to get shelter, and if they can't, then the city says, okay, taxpayers are willing to do it. The fingerprinting issue I brought up is another example of some people thinking that we shouldn't test in that case for food stamps, which is a federal program, and the federal program requires that you be not a citizen, I don't think. I think you have to be either a citizen or a documented alien. In terms of fingerprinting undocumented people, I guess the first thing from a practical point of view, there'd be no record. You know, what do you compare it to? Number two, keep in mind the undocumented is becoming less of a problem as our economy has slowed down. There's a lot of evidence that there are very few people crossing the borders. Awful lot fewer than there used to be. And there's some evidence that a lot of people have gone back when they couldn't find jobs to their home country. America's not an easy place to live, particularly in places like New York City. You have to work very hard. It's very competitive, as we know. And you can't just come here and say, well, I'm going to get some benefits, put my feet up. And I think that's a stereotype that just isn't grounded in reality. Most of the undocumented that are here do work very hard, don't commit a lot of crimes, don't live in public housing. They don't take advantage of government services because they're, I guess, worried about being deported. And they pay taxes. That's the other dirty little secret here, that I think something like 75% of all undocumented that work pay taxes. Why? Because their employer withholds taxes. But when it comes to sending a rebate, there's no place to send it. And I vaguely, the actuary for Social Security pointed out that if you were to deport the, at that time the estimates were 11 million undocumented, probably much lower now, that Social Security would go bankrupt 6 years earlier because they pay into Social Security but don't use any of the benefits. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's weird is what it is. I mean, it's weird to think that we've got a system that is so precarious that we have to rely on those or those that pay their taxes but don't use the money. It's crazy. I mean, it's insane. We were talking about it earlier. Yeah. It's nothing new. That's going to do it for today, Mr. Mayor, unfortunately. We thank everybody for their telephone calls. Time is up, as always the case.
We're going to see each other next week.
I hope so, yes, absolutely. Next Friday.
God willing.
You can count on
and,
it.
And sad about Matt Saplin.
Yes, and indeed, to he and his family, the very, very best, obviously. Our thoughts and prayers with him. It's just about 9 o'clock.